altitude's undefeated.
Crap, rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge town on it,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
From you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. It is Wednesday, May 10th, 2023. My name is Matt Pollard, and too many things have happened since our last show, you guys. The Rapids won two games in California as Kevin Cabral left the LA Galaxy in tatters and got his revenge in Carson. The Pids also won in the Open Cup at Sacramento. That's now they've won two games in the Open Cup in 1 year. That's the first time they've done that this century. Wow. One Burgundy boy is going to the U20 World Cup, and another might be going to prison for 6 years. Joining me now for this hot mess of a podcast, alongside his daughter, a man who published a book this week, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Yeah, Etta's here. Etta, say hi to all of our loyal listeners. I told Etta how many listeners...
Child.
Yeah, it's okay. I told Etta how many listeners we had, roughly, based on the last couple podcasts, and was like, that many people listen to you? And Etta was like, I have 14 followers on CapCut. And I was like, well, we've been doing this a little longer than you have. So.
What is CapCut?
Yeah, Etta does little videos and stuff and drops them on the social version of the editing website, so.
So, like, Tumblr meets TikTok?
Yeah, it's a thing. It's really an app that people use for TikTok, but Etta, as a 10-year-old, is not allowed to have TikTok yet. And, you know, that's for the best, because the Chinese are using it to spy on us anyways. So.
Okay, so, Rabbi, we have a lot of things to talk about, so let's go to it first. First, the only non-soccer thing that I think we'll be discussing this weekend, Mark, before you and I become criminal law journalists, tell our good listeners about your non-soccer-related book.
I mean, it's not totally not soccer-related, because I posted to the Holding the High Line Substack about, like, why you might want to read it. So I think one of the challenges, Matt, is... first of all, it's basically a self-help spirituality book for anybody, which automatically, for those of you who are sports fans and are soccer fans, you're always like, bah, self-help, you know, like, who moved my cheese, you know, like, you know, thin thighs in 30 days, like, these kinds of books are garbage and nobody in their right mind would read them. But they're really, you know, Matt and I are both kind of the ilk where... We recognize that human beings have emotions, and sometimes, and this was, I think, the analogy that'll make sense for those who've liked our Ted Lasso banter, sometimes you need a little post-it note in the corner of the mirror when you get up in the morning to make you remember why you get up in the morning. Sometimes you need to go out of the dressing room with a Believe poster over the exit to make you believe, and you need to yell with a bunch of other people. 12 on, you know, on 12, you know, like, or like Richmond on 3. Like, you need those things. You need those things in life to get you over. And I wear my heart on my sleeve. I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I let my congregants know how I'm feeling. I hide it when I need to hide it, but I let it out when I need to let it out. And I think this book is all about giving you a pick-me-up when you need it and giving you permission as a woman, as a man, as a non-binary person, as a human being in this universe to feel what you're feeling. And I think that's good. And also to use it in a, like, it's got some sportsy analogy thingies, but it's also got, you know, very contemporary language. And I think when I say contemporary language, I will refer back to the commentators on Ted Lasso, right? Sometimes I will have to apologize for the fruity language. It's the first 18th, 19th century Hasidic translation text spiritual self-help book with the F word in it in human history. There are no other books like this. And so if you need a little Ted Lasso Believe in the morning if you need to pick me up. I highly recommend it. $22 on Amazon. Look for Mark Asher Goodman. Life Lessons from Recently Dead Rabbis. Last thing I'll say, Matt, because this pod book is not a narcissistic exercise in self-promotion, although sometimes, Matt, we all know that it is. You know, the process of writing a book is a really cool experience, and I'd love to talk about that some other time when we don't have a hot mess of a podcast to get through with a lot of information going on.
So, Mark, moving on, we'll start with, I guess, the two shortest press releases and related games that we'll be talking about. Earlier today, the United States U.S. Soccer Federation announced that the 21-man roster for the U20 World Cup, which is coming up starting later this month, taking place in Argentina, and our very own Darren Yappe has made the group as Etta waves goodbye to the podcast, Mark. So she said... She said more things than Iggy did as well. So she's had a longer cameo. She's waving goodbye in the background of the Michael Azira Memorial Basement. And I think that'll be enough time wasting from your daughter with that, Rabbi. So Darren Yappe named the U20 World Cup squad for the United States. Mark, he was in camp with the U20s back in January. He was called up during the international window in March. He played in all of the games during that period as well. And if I look at this roster, Mark, there's been a little bit of controversy around the roster because this is not a FIFA, it's not a FIFA sanctioned competition in that clubs don't necessarily have to play ball with making some of their players available. So I know there's an LA Galaxy kid who's not going to be called, and I think it's Jalen Neal, might be wrong on that. Also, one key omission from an attacking standpoint for the side, Paxton Aronson has not been released as well. Brendan Aronson's younger brother. So I look at the forward core, Mark, in terms of the competition that one Darren Yappe is going to have. There's Cade Cowell and Kevin Paredes, who are both normally wide players, and then the only real true number nine that Yappe will be competing with for minutes will be Quinn Sullivan, a homegrown with Philadelphia Union, who is in and around the first team last year. He hasn't really done a whole lot. I think there's probably more hype, though, for Yappe than there is for Sullivan. I'm not sure either has lived up to said hype so far. But Rabbi, we're excited that there is a Rapids homegrown who is going to the U20 World Cup. We're excited that he has a real possibility to get some minutes in that World Cup. I think they're in a good group with the way that the format is set up there in Group B, which is with Ecuador and Fiji and Slovakia, Slovenia, one of the red and blue Baltic flag countries as well. Based on the format, there's a number of teams in the best thirds that will also get through. So the U.S. expectation should be to at least get out of the group. Mark, your thoughts on what this means for Yappe and what will this mean given there's potentially, 4 weeks that the Rapids will be without him?
I think it's great. I don't have a lot of thoughts on the U20s. I haven't watched a lot of, it's been hard to watch some of the younger age group stuff in anything short of a age group World Cup. I remember watching, I think it was the U17s or the U18s when Josh Sargent was with them when they were playing their tournament in India, and it was just a blast to kind of dig in. That was a really good team with a lot of players who are on the current USMNT senior team. So my only comment is there is a road from the U20s directly to the senior team, and Yappe has something, if he continues to develop, that he can offer at the senior team level, which they don't really have right now, which is a pacey, big body player. I mean, they since Jozy Altidore's fantastic performance in 2014, the team has really lacked a Jozy Altidore type player, like a fast, technical, big player who can really do all the things. And that is really Darren Yappe's ceiling is roughly Jozy Altidore-esque, because he's built like Jozy. I'm probably thinking, to be honest, about Jozy because I watched him last night as the Pittsburgh Riverhounds dismantled the New England Revolution 1-0. Dismantle isn't really the right word, but anyway, it felt like a dismantling. But anyhow, it's very exciting for Darren Yappe, and I'm putting his ceiling very high. But I do think there's it'll take a while to suss out what this means for him in terms of his development. the challenge for the Rapids, of course, is Yappe's been slotted in as kind of a backup center forward, and they need him. You know, they need him to come on in the 75th and relieve Cabral or relieve Rubio or relieve Lewis or whoever's playing center striker for the Rapids. And now they don't have him. And we'll talk later in the podcast that this is a team that is really rapidly, no pun intended, losing frontline players. We can't afford to lose too many players. I want Yappe to go. It's good for his development. But we're starting to wonder whether the team's depth is capable of absorbing the challenges that they're about to face.
One of the other really good benefits, Mark, for Yappe going into this competition, even though, to your point, it will be a detriment short term for the Rapids in the next couple weeks, is this is a competition, the U-20 and the U-23 World Cup, more so, I think the U-17s getting there is really where a lot of big scouts are also looking at academy kids and academy kids who have already broken in with their first team. Mark, you will remember when Freddie Adu actually first got really on the scene from an international standpoint by playing in a Youth World Cup with the United States. And I believe, I might have this wrong from remembering Grant Wall's podcast series on Freddie Adu, was that was actually where he met Sir Alex Ferguson and actually had his, like, they had each other's personal cell phone numbers, which what, in the mid-2000s was probably a really big deal, to say nothing of the technology at that point. So this is good for Yappe in terms of getting in with the national team to potentially get a little bit more film and familiarity within the federation, to where the new head coach, who will be appointed hopefully later this year, and I guess worst case scenario, maybe Anthony Hudson does the Rapids a favor calling Yappe in for the Gold Cup, that Yappe gets more familiarity with the federation, which would help his stock in terms of the upcoming World Cup cycle, and it would help his stock in terms of national pedigree and being on the radar of European teams that potentially could call Porrick Smith and offer several million dollars in a transfer fee for him, which is beneficial. Moving on, earlier today in the first and far, in one of three press releases the Colorado Rapids put out today, and certainly the most positive of them is that the Rapids are unveiling a new plan for the North Boundary as a game day destination at the Richard. Listeners, you'll remember the north side of the field. There was once upon a time when that had bleachers. That was once upon a time, Mark, where all of the supporters pre-seed 38 all existed. It is now this weird kind of outdoor tent and lawn chair area, kind of really bougie for the some of the more expensive hospitality seats, might be the right term to describe them as well. And coming back open as of 4th Fest, so the 4th of July home game, the Colorado Rapids will be starting this new open north boundary area. Then we'll have some tent areas with some food. There'll be some patio vibes as well. It is giving me, Mark, a lot of, not rock pile, what am I thinking? The outdoor bar area in the upper section in right field at Coors Field vibes. There's also used to be a patio section in what is now the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame in that corner for FC Dallas, the stadium as well. Mark, this looks like supporters vibes. It's going to be open to supporters from all over the stands as well. It looks really nice. It looks to have a nice vibe, really good family atmosphere as well, a good spot to hang out maybe before the game, or if your kids need a little bit more space to run around and you don't want them actually running into Richard Terry and having beer being spilled all over them on the south side, this is an alternative. And also at ground level, something you don't have with the north upper walk area, which could dissuade some fans. Rabbi, your thoughts?
I am thrilled about this development. I wish we had just all the podcast to talk about this. It's the kind of thing that I think Rapids fans have been talking about for a decade as an idea. The potential for that space is high. The ability to have like a nice open bar space to grab food at the game and sit in that section. And the other thing is, you know, the question of like, what was there before? Like, what does it replace? Is this potentially going to replace something that was really great that we're all going to miss? The answer is no. They were little corporate tents that didn't really ever look like they were professional or high grade. They always kind of looked flimsy.
A lot of empty as well. So
that's right. Right. When you look behind the goal during a match and you see a lot of empty space, it's really heartbreaking. You know, it makes the team look not so great. I do wonder how, you know, kind of corporate functiony kind of things will work in the future. But I assume that like standing room only tickets could be sold on that spot. The thing before that was that used to be where the supporter section was. But the problem with it, if you don't remember back to the long, long ago days when the supporter section was there, which was like 2015, 2016 probably was the last year that 101 was the supporter section. And in fact, there was a weird year where the supporters were split between 101 and 117, and that was awful. The problem with the supporters, with C38 in section 101, is the way that that section is designed. It's basically, there's two ramps to the outside of the stadium, and so it's kind of open. So it doesn't hold noise. So no matter how loud you are on that end, you're not really that loud. The sound kind of leaks out. And so C38 sounds 1,000% louder speaking from, you know, cheering from 117. So there's no, like, you have to put something. And the last thing is, if you're wondering, like, well, why don't they just build permanent stands there? The answer is, well, that's where the stage is for Phish, right? Like, they have a huge concert that makes them a lot of money, and the space was designed to hold the stage. So they seem to have finally, after many, many years of a lot of us thinking, you know, it would be great there is a patio and some food trucks. I've started to say that. I think I said that 10 years ago, Matt. I think it's the first time I ever saw that end. I was like, you know, it'd be great is a patio and food trucks. And almost 10 years later, we're getting the patio minus the food trucks. Maybe in a year or two, there'll be some food stands there or some carts or some trucks or a bar, or it'll be developed enough. Like, I think right now, picnic tables, standing room, you know, maybe like a Dippin' Dots and a hot dog stand, and that'll be a huge improvement over what it's been in the past.
Yeah, good stuff there, Rabbi. And based on at least just the initial graphic that I've seen, that Rabbi, as an engineer who has put together some of these AutoCAD drawings of what things will look like initially, there's going to be some design build changes. It never looks exactly like the same rendering, as NYCFC put out renderings for their new stadium in Queens just a few hours ago. So the thing I'm looking at from an engineering standpoint, Mark, is this looks like a modular design. So this looks like something that could change throughout the year depending on what fans want, depending on the climate as well. Maybe you bring out a bigger tent for, you know, some of the colder weather as well would be nicer. And then it's just outside, you know, patio vibes, which is basically just, you know, Rhino and Cap Hill in the summer and Highlands in the summer as well. And it still leaves that option for the stage and other things. You know, Mark, the DSG was built in that same era where there was this flexibility in the stadium, either in having a permanent stage or basically almost a horseshoe set up in the stadium. Old Columbus Crew Stadium had that, and I always thought it was really kind of ugly and wonky. FC Dallas still has that, and they still haven't come up with a permanent solution. They basically have what the Rapids had with C38 with the Beer Guardians right behind there, and it looks bad on TV. It looks bad in person. It doesn't sound great, and it's not logistically great for the supporters, other than you take 10 steps down bleachers and then walk 50 feet, and there's a beer tap right there, I suppose. And the other cool thing about this, at least from the rendering, Mark, it still has that big open ramp that the players will walk down during the procession pregame as well. So I know San Jose made a really big deal out of that with the way that they have their players kind of come through the concourse as well. So maybe there's an opportunity for them to rope or rail that off and turn it into a unique fan experience where, you know, the players are right next to some fans walking out as they go on for the game. Right now, it's in between, as I said, you know, the corporate patio tents that they have where there's not a whole lot of people there and there's not that same atmosphere. Here, fans could be right on top and there's a chance for, you know, you to wave to Diego Rubio, get a nice little smile from Lalo Sabubakar, and, you know, maybe yell some four-letter words at RSL players, which will always be fun. Anything else that we want to say about the banter topics, Rabbi, or shall we move on to the actual games the Pids played last week?
So much soccer to talk about. Let's keep going.
Listeners, this past Saturday at the Diggity in Carson, California, the Colorado Rapids went in to play the LA Galaxy and got a 3-1 win, just their second road win, second win overall in league play this season. Mark, the Rapids already have more road wins in MLS play this year than they did all of last year, so hooray for that. Rapids come out with a bit of a hybrid lineup. Mark, Kevin Cabral starting up top in his former home stadium, and the Galaxy come out and they are energetic. Rabbi Ricky Pooge is doing stuff. They're getting the ball out wide. A little bit issues with gap control from the Colorado Rapids, but the Rapids ultimately strike first, winning a corner 15 minutes in, and Lal Subhubakar with an open header from Connor Ronan to make it 1-0. Jonathan Klinsmann missed the clearance on that one. Kevin Cabral had some nice techers. They did some good stuff in transition, Mark, but it was really about the Rapids. Very similar to the Vancouver game, setting up firstly in a defensive posture, inviting the LA Galaxy to come forward, and the Galaxy getting in some good areas, but doing absolutely nothing with it. You know, Ricky Pooge, Dejan Jovelic had a couple of opportunities. Chicharito wanted a penalty because he had to have something to complain about to the ref since he wasn't scoring goals or anything. In the second half, I thought it was a little bit more balanced, but the Galaxy came out with energy again. William Yarbrough definitely earning his paycheck again in making a number of very, very good saves before. In the 65th minute, the Rapids win the ball back in their defensive third and then go direct. Max Alves passing to Connor Ronan, who delivered a great through ball to Diego Rubio to see Rubio and Kevin Cabral go in on goal with no defenders left to go. Rubio squares the ball to Kevin Cabral for a tap-in, Mark, that I think you, me, and all of our living grandparents could probably convert. And then Kevin Cabral proceeds to celebrate with the shivering arms, turning away from the Victoria block, which Mark just had the return of Angel City Brigade as they deviated themselves from the boycott surrounding the Klein Out movement, pulls up the shoulder sleeves on his jersey to show his name and everything, turns back around, and then does a heart hand. So cold as ice, cold hearted from Kevin Cabral with his celebration on that. And then the game kind of devolves from there. In the 81st minute, Danny Wilson with a great long ball to Jonathan Lewis, who plays a 1-2 with Connor Ronan, to see Lewis slip the ball past Jonathan Klinsmann to make it 3-0. And then in the 89th minute, a garbage goal for Preston Judd, who came off the bench. Julian Alvarez with a ball in the box. Danny Wilson kind of flubs the clearance with William Yarbrough out of position to also try and play the ball, and Judd has a tap-in. As I said on Twitter, tweeting from Burgundy Wave, if you want to nitpick that, feel free to do so, Rapids fans. From a on-the-field standpoint, Rabbi and I are just here for vibes and joy today, and that is what I recommend you should have chosen on Saturday night. Rabbi, I will throw it to you. What was your good thing from this past Saturday win against the G's?
It was just an overall really well-played game. I really liked the way the Rapids flowed into space. I thought that they attacked the gaps. You know, one of the things I've gotten used to over the last 3 years with the Galaxy, but even before then, their style of play is on the front foot and aggressive, but it leaves a lot of open space in the middle for teams to kind of walk into and surge forward. I think the Rapids in past games had been a little tentative to move into those spots. They knew that could open them up and expose them in ways that would allow for counterattack, and they wanted to, especially on the road, be cautious. But in this game, they moved into the dangerous spaces thoughtfully and did a great job of it. And I thought that was the way they played against the Galaxy was the way I would like them to play all season. Now, that being said, teams don't open themselves up like the Galaxy. When you get a one-goal lead, you open yourself up more and allows for the Rapids to go out and, you know, get two. Game states is a factor, right? Game states is the concept that the game changes based on the scoreline. Everybody plays a little bit differently. I really felt that this was a very complete performance by the Rapids. I will just add the quick caveat that the Galaxy are in chaos right now. They are really, really playing poorly. You know, Chicharito came out a couple games ago and said, you know, I really feel like we're having fun and we're doing really well. And I was like, are you? You know, is this a blip or a trend? You know, like, are you guys really back on? And the answer was no, they are not.
Did you see, Rabbi, did you see the news that Mike Gray over the Striker News dropped, I think, today or yesterday?
No.
So AEG Brass, like the Anschutz, are actually in town and they're having a meeting midweek. And then depending on how this week goes for the Galaxy, who are currently about to kick off against Seattle in the Open Cup, and then they have a Cali Classico at home against the Quakes on Sunday in prime time to discuss the future of Chris Klein and whether or not it's beneficial, even if it doesn't help them in terms of their actual operations, that it helps them from a PR standpoint for him to step down, mutually part ways, PR language, and then also potentially discuss the future of Greg Vanney, given where the team is in the table as well. The Colorado Rapids listeners might actually be grim reapering the LA Galaxy season, and we're only in the first week of May.
Wow.
I'm going to go into my good things, Mark. We have to start with Kevin Cabral, right, who started up top, and, you know, he gets ultimately the game-winning goal, and I thought he played fantastic in transition. He had that one play in about halfway through the first half where he kind of goes in alone on a counterattack with three or four Galaxy defenders back, and he like breaks some ankles and pulls some techers back and forth, and it wasn't for the fact that he did exactly what I was expecting in proceeding to shoot right at Jonathan Klinsmann. Mark, that's potentially a goal of the year candidate if he buries that top left corner as well, and he came out with really energy and impetus and a mentality that I think we saw previously in for stretches in games or when he was a substitute or when there was something to play for in a game that he was playing in. I don't know that we saw it for like from the start in games that he started in and continued well into the second half. Just his energy from a pressing standpoint, his willingness to drop back and really help, just understanding what the game needed and what his teammates needed in that moment, even if it was difficult or he was chasing down a hopeless ball or something. Just the energy and the will that Kevin Cabral showed in this one I thought was fantastic. And that was rewarded and capped off by him scoring a goal and doing it in front of the supporters who booed him in a playoff game 6-7 months ago is absolutely fantastic. And Robin Fraser really summed it up for me, Mark, saying after the game, quote, "He handled it extremely well. This is a place where I felt he had a tough time. Seems like he had a tough time with the fans." Mark, the fact that Robin is noticing that and saying it publicly speaks volumes. Continuing the quote, "Really pleased for him to have a workman-like performance and then cap it off with a goal for him. I'm really excited the way things went for him. I'm so happy for him to score tonight." That says it all I could want. And then the other good thing that I had, Mark, was just another fantastic performance from William Yarbrough. Rapids fans, I know, have been a little bit queasy about the fact that the club's going to have to make a potentially significant financial decision about Marco Ilicha on it come the summer, and the Rapids are potentially doing that off of, what, two, maybe now three Open Cup performances, potentially. The Rapids brought in a goalkeeper and got an upgrade at the goalkeeper position. They did so by signing a backup and then pissing off the starter that then made the starter return to the best form that he's ever had for the club and everything. I don't know how you can complain about that. And then, Rabbi, I'm just going to run down a list of just a night of firsts and everything that happened that just highlight how much this performance, I felt like, was coming, Mark. And Connor Ronan said it pretty well after the game, where the performances was there, but they didn't necessarily have the final result. And this is a result that I think they saw coming and wanted to have coming. And I think it's extremely vindicating and potentially an inflection point on the season. So, first set piece goal of the year. First goal in the first half of a game in MLS play. First goal of the season for Jonathan Lewis and Lalas Abubakar in league play. Connor Ronan with his first goal contributions for the team and three assists on the night, Mark. That's fantastic. That's something Jack Price would have been proud of. Best performance by Kevin Cabral in a Rapids shirt, bar none. This win turns now a 9-game unbeaten streak into a 9-game nine-game unbeaten streak. Absolutely fantastic. Second road win of the season. They got one in all of 2022. Rabbi, what bad things do you have for this game?
Well, I just wanted to give one more good thing because I didn't really get to give it. But you know me, and I think I can't help myself at this point from saying it. The first goal came on a corner kick.
Loki's toboggan!
It was a Loki's toboggan.
Let's go!
That's right.
Russia.
It was interesting. I was watching Birmingham Memphis tonight in U.S. Open Cup, and Enzo Martinez had the assist to Juan Agudelo, Swagadelo, and it was a short. It was a very short corner with a quick dribble right down the baseline, and then Enzo Martinez hammered a perfect low pass to Agudelo to tap it into the front post. And it was a really cool play. And then they had a corner like 2 minutes later, and they set up in the same like short corner setup. And I was like, oh my God, that's so great, because you probably won't run the identical play, even though it looks like you're about to run the identical play, but you have to protect in case you do run the identical play. And that is the amazing thing about Loki's Toboggan as a play. For those who have not listened to us on this podcast before, Loki's Toboggan is basically a stack of five or six Rapids players who are just stacked up on each other in the box. And upon the striking of the ball, they break in two different directions, and the defenders don't know whether their man is going left or right. And so if you play a zone, there's a good chance you're going to be flooded and overloaded in the zone. If you play man to man, there's a good chance your man is on the wrong side of you. And somehow the most amazing thing about Loki's Toboggan, Matt, to me, is it feels like Lawless Abubakar is almost always on the end of those plays. Like, he's going back post for the header, and he's really good at it. So that also is a big part of this game, which is that the Rapids went to the thing that they do best, which is set pieces. They went to a set piece they do better than almost any team in MLS. They've been doing Loki's Toboggan for 3 or 4 seasons now. It was great. Anyhow, what's a bad thing about this game? I don't really have many bad things about this game. There were a few players who were kind of not particularly involved in a lot of the match. But overall, I, 10 out of 10, no notes. I don't really have much to say. I'll kick it to you, Matt.
First of all, Rabbi, if we didn't have something far more serious that's going to dominate the conversation and thus be the inspiration for the name of this podcast, like Lawless's Toboggan as opposed to Loki's Toboggan, would have been a perfect podcast title. My only real comment, Mark, and I have to again wonder how much of this is circumstantial, going on the road against a team that you know is going to come out energetic, is going to try and attack and then leave themselves open in transition, and setting yourself up in a defensive posture to negate what they're doing attacking wise to then facilitate the offense, I can be talked into. And I can also be talked into just the injuries that this team has going on. This is just another game in a row in which the Rapids ceded possession and really let the opponent be the protagonist. They did that against Vancouver. They did that against the LA Galaxy. As we'll get to in a minute, they did it against Sacramento, and they did it even when Sacramento was down a man for the better part of 30 minutes plus stoppage time. And, that's having me think that Robin Fraser is trending more towards the Pablo Mastroeni, Gary Smith rapid ball approach to it, as opposed to what was supposed to be this hybridized but new but still for at least slightly more forward thinking version of the club style of play from the Rapids way. And again, if the Rapids come out in a 3-4-3 and they're thinking we're absolutely going to take it to Philadelphia, and this is just how Robin wants to set up in an advantageous way against certain teams on the road, especially when you're shorthanded, I will hold my hands up and say Robin Fraser knows more about setting this team up to win than I do. But this is not a strategy that I think is a long-term permanent solution for the club in terms of trying to be successful come the fall. And that's a concern that I have that, again, could be part of the process, but not necessarily the long-term answer. And maybe this is just what's working right now for them in this moment. And hard to argue when you got a draw in Vancouver that you could have won, and then now two wins on the road in two different competitions. Big things, Mark. I just wanted to say, this felt like a true six-pointer, and it feels like this result, I think, has clearly catapulted the Rapids outside of that bottom tier that Matt Doyle would have. I think it's the, I'd put not Chicago Fire, who's at the bottom of the East right now, who I can't remember. New York Red Bulls. New York and Chicago are down there. I still think Kansas City and the LA Galaxy are down there. And then I think you could maybe have a conversation. Toronto's got some injuries. I don't think Charlotte is going in the right direction. Montreal will be there in the end. Austin looks terrible as well, Mark. I think it's pretty clearly we can say at this point, with this result and the way the Rapids are trending and they get healthy and everything, that we can say they're closer to being a bubble team, a competitive playoff team, than they are the seller Waller Dwellers. Let's see what they do in the summer and then maybe have a conversation about the Wooden Spoon. The Rapids are clearly distancing themselves from Kansas City and the LA Galaxy, both in terms of performance, the way they are setting up, the atmosphere and the energy around the club, today's incident notwithstanding, and certainly where they are on the table now. Rabbi, shall we move on to the open Cuppity Cup Cup?
Cuppity Cup Cup it is.
Listeners, yesterday at time of recording at, it's not Bonnie Field, I think it's Heath Health, something or other, some other sponsored name at the fairgrounds at the state capitol in Sacramento, California, the Colorado Rapids went in with a hybrid lineup mark and they got a 4-2 victory over Sacramento Republic. I believe just the second ever loss Sacramento Republic has had in Open Cup play at their home stadium, so that is saying something. I'll run down the lineup for you, Rabbi, because there were a lot of injuries that were listed on this one. Interestingly enough, listeners, the last two Open Cup games, both Brian Acosta and Diego Rubio have been listed as injured, but played previously in the league play. Well, Acosta didn't play over the weekend, but Rubio, Mark, has been listed out and initially questionable for the two Open Cup games, but having played the MLS game that happened the weekend before the Open Cup game and the weekend after game. So read into that as you want. Came out in a 3-4-3, mostly Marco Ilić making his second start for the Rapids, Mike Edwards making his first start for the first team in a back line that included Andreas Maksu wearing the captain's armband and Anthony Markanich in a center back role. Wing backs, wide midfielders, you had Sebastian Anderson on the right and Alex Gersh back on the left. In the middle, it was Ralph Prisno and Danny Leyva making his first start for the club. And then up top, you had Johnny Lewis as the false nine, and then Max Alves and Michael Barrios on the wings. And again, Mark, the Rapids come out, cede possession, and the opponents creating chances, but it was way more wide open, and Sacramento had a lot of opportunities to try and score in this game. Too much space out wide, and then really poor gap control by that makeshift back line and the makeshift midfield in front of them, but the Rapids get on the board first. 4 minutes in, Ralph Prisso winning a ball in midfield, getting it forward to Danny Leyva, who slips it into Jonathan Lewis, who makes a great run to split the center backs. Nice touch to round the keeper and then pass the ball into the bottom left-hand corner. 15 minutes in, the Rapids win at their first corner of the game, and it's Mike Edwards who scores on a goal eerily similar to Lawless Abubakar, getting open and then directing it to the side of the goalkeeper and into the back of the net. Alex Gershback was taking the corner on that one, Mark, so his first goal contribution as a member of the Burgundy Boys. 30 minutes in, it is 2-1. Kecko finding Herrera open in the box. Too much space out wide. Nobody getting to Kecko before he puts the cross in. And then Herrera doing a good job to split Mike Edwards and Andreas Maksu for an open header. Marco Ilić caught in no man's land on that one. That would not be the last time that happened in this game. Listeners, Rapids come out and make three halftime substitutions, Danny Wilson in, Sam Nicholson in, and Keegan Rosenberry in to try and stabilize the defensive shape. But in the 52nd minute, it's Herrera who scores again. This assist coming from Gurr in a very similar play to make it 2-2. 3 minutes later, it's Sam Nicholson who pounces on a rebound after a direct counterattack that sees Michael Barrios hit the far post, bounces out, and Nicholson's there for a tap-in. Nicholson's first goal of Open Cup, second goal in all comps for the Scotsman. 3 minutes or 7 minutes later, Mark, you had maybe one of the quickest red cards in terms of double yellows in succession in Rapids opponent history. Shane Wyatt, W-I-E-D-T, not sure how to say that last name, but
he's a former Riverhound. It's Weed.
Weed. Weed?
Weed.
Okay. He gets a yellow card, Mark, first for a shot to the body on Sam Nicholson, clearly a yellow card, and then a tactical foul on Jonathan Lewis with a little bit of studs raked in there as well. It would have been a harsh red card, but in any case, he's sent off. And I figure, Mark, at that point, okay, the Rapids are up a goal, they're up a man, they're starting to sub in their starters and everything. This is fine, right? There's not going to be any chaos that happens, but Sacramento doubles down on their approach as they did after every single goal that the Rapids scored, throwing numbers forward, getting the ball into good areas, some chances that were dealt with well defensively, some chances that were way too wide open, that if an MLS team was getting those opportunities, Mark, the Rapids would not have won this game 4-2. But ultimately, the Rapids get the game sealed, signed, and delivered on the 81st minute. Sam Nicholson winning the ball and delivering a great long ball, just like Danny Wilson to Jonathan Lewis. Sam Nicholson finds Brian Galvan, who had just subbed into the game, and Galvan plays it to Michael Barrios at the back post, and Barrios has a header that he puts across goal and into the back of the net. Galvan with back-to-back substitute appearances in these two games in California, and his first goal contribution of the 2023 season. Rabbi, good things.
I was thrilled to see some important bench players getting a start. Alex Gersbach, who's been kind of MIA since game 2-3 of the MLS season because he wasn't super spectacular. Danny Leyva getting his starting debut, I believe, and really having a great performance all around. Anthony Markanek doing Anthony Markanek things. Michael Edwards getting a goal. And Sebastian Anderson. Just a lot of players we don't normally see getting time and really competing against a very good Sacramento team who didn't look at their best on the day. You know, just to be honest, Juan Herrera had, you know, banged in two goals and overall his stats were really good. But this was a complete performance by a Rapids team that showed that they have a little bit of a bench that is capable. And in past years, and the reason I've been incredibly pessimistic on Twitter with my prognostications about the Rapids in Open Cup is one, because the Rapids typically have terrible Open Cup performances these last 10 years. And two, this Rapids team, I think, was suspect when it comes to depth. And it turns out, at least according to the two performances they put in so far, there is some depth on this team. So a lot of good things going around, good performances from players who don't normally start, and good display that this team actually has some depth. Matt, what did you think was the best things to note about this team?
Fantastic to see, especially given what we're about to talk about, Brian Galvan returning to the team. You know, he had the ACL tear last season. He came into preseason almost out of it, but, you know, was working his way into the first team. And then I think he subbed in that game at Seattle, or one of the first two or three games of the season. He had a sub appearance, wasn't really fit yet. He had that groin injury. I've been out at training. He'd been in and out, you know, some ball work, wasn't fully participating. And then just to see, I think it was the Vancouver game was the first game where he was officially not listed on any of the game notes for the injury reports, either in the lead up to it, and then he wasn't listed as out on the day of when the roster was announced, when the lineup was announced. And so it was just great to see him come into two games as well, and then to come into this game and really have an effect. You know, Galvan Robin Fraser was asked about Galvan's return and everything, and he mentioned that, you know, he comes in, he's cutting inside, and it's like the, oh, we're going to see this before, he's going to bend it back post. And to see Galvan have the physical ability to execute that play, but then also the game speed, you know, soccer IQ to see that moment, realize he can't score, and then to think, let me play it to Barrios for a relatively simple tap in header, and then to execute it when his default, like, you know, routine would be to just try and shoot it and bend it inside the back post, probably go straight at the keeper in that regard, I think shows, it was nice to see him do that. It's going to do wonders for his confidence as he tries to work his way back into fitness, and just that speaks well of, I think, just the potential that he can still build up to and bring to the team that I think desperately is going to need it. And just on the top of that, just the offense continues for that. You know, Jonathan Lewis, 4 goals in 4 games, all competitions. The only game in which he has not scored in that stretch, he drew the penalty at Vancouver coming off the bench as well. I have to think confidence wise, he's doing much better. His impetus, very similar to Cabral, albeit for different reasons, and where he gets his confidence from and what his role is within the team, but still, you know, he's doing better. Michael Barrios continues to be an Aegis wonder in transition and is absolutely fantastic. And to your point, Mark, about, you know, Danny Leyva's performance, you're seeing much better positioning from the fringe midfielders in terms of doing their defensive duties and then transitioning that to offense. Ralph Prizzo on the first goal getting the hockey assist to Danny Leyva. Leyva obviously with the primary assist to Jonathan Lewis for the first goal. Mark, that's something that if Michael Azira and Sam Cronin did that in a 1-0 victory in 2015-2016, you and I would be like, oh, yep, Sam Cronin, Michael Azira, it's what they do. Sam Cronin makes the tackle, he wins the ball, makes a quick pass, Azira opens up the play, and then one of the, you know, Rapids in-form attackers, you know, opens up the team and shows their quality and everything. So fantastic to see that rolling through, and what, that's 7 goals in 2 games, and if we go back to Hailstorm as well. You're talking, what, 10 goals and 4? And the only other game was a 0-0 draw against Vancouver. I can live with that right now, especially given the stretch that the Rapids have coming up. Moving on to bad things, Mark. I think there's some minor concern in that they conceded 2 goals, and both of the goals were very similar to each other. The one hesitation I have with that, Rabbi, is I don't know how many games this season the Rapids will be playing a back three with Maxue, Edwards, and Markanić, to say nothing of obviously then having Marko Ilić in at the back as well. And then you potentially, from a communication standpoint, maybe you've got a little bit of a language barrier. You compare that to Lawless, who's fluent but speaking English as a second language, Danny speaking with an accent, Will speaking as a native, and then Maxue speaking English as a second language, compared to Ilić, who's speaking English as a second language and does not have the same primary language as Andreas Maxue. Maybe there's a communication error as well. I have to imagine if it was the expected back three of Wilson and of Lawless in the back there, I think, and to say, and also Will in goal, I don't think those two plays end the same way. So mistakes that were burned in the context of the game that did not cost you come the final whistle, that I think will be good learning moments and good film review this week for a Mike Edwards, a Markanić, a Marko Ilić. Nice to see. And then just again, Mark, the Rapids set up in defensive posture and invited attacks forward. And then even after the Rapids got a goal, they got in the Galaxy game, the Galaxy were the better team 15 minutes in. And the Rapids get a goal against the run of play, and that builds their confidence, and that sways the narrative, the flow of how the game is going. And that did not happen come the 15 minute when the Rapids were already up a goal. Like, they got another goal, and then Sacramento doubled down on their approach. They increased their level and their energy, and the Rapids just sat back and absorbed pressure, and some decent emergency defending, some decent misses by Sacramento, clearly showing, I think, the gulf in quality between a Jonathan Lewis, a Michael Barrios, a Kevin Cabral, and where the attackers were for Sacramento Republic. But Mark, I could still argue that Sacramento were the protagonists and the ones who had the far better of the play, even after they went down a man. And then even you think Robin Fraser looking at that first half and thinking like, oh my God, like good that we're up 2-1, but holy crap, from a performance standpoint, we need to shore things up. And you bring in Wilson and Rosenberry to try and settle things down. You bring in Nicholson to maybe bring a little bit more quality box to box in the from a wide play. I think Sam did that. He didn't help from a defensive standpoint, and still at times you had several minute sequences where it was siege mentality and everything against the USL opponent. Even with all the praises that we've given to Sacramento in the last 10 days, I'd like to see that be a little bit better. Again, if the Rapids come out guns blazing and completely put Philadelphia under the cosh, if they play better and are even on the balance of play against the two Ohio teams coming up as well, I'll raise both of my hands and say, okay, they figured that out and everything. But right now, it's still a concern for me. Rabbi, any bad things for you?
Well, they're both silly. One is Yosuke Hanya is just tearing it up with Rapids 2. I would have liked to have seen him get in a call-up. And Oliver Larraz is just a personal favorite player. He was on the bench for this one, but he didn't get into the match. I would have liked to have seen him get in. But, you know, you got to have more of a cushion than a 3-2 lead after 80 minutes. So you're gonna need more than that. I think your other points about Sacramento playing them straight up or looking really good in long stretches against the Rapids is another notable thing. Again, Sacramento, one of the better teams in USL, but still, you don't really want to make this game look as close as it was. That being said, you know, I mentioned before, I watched the Riverhounds really take it to New England Revolution. And this was a Revolution team that did exactly what I would expect that they would have done against the Riverhounds, which is to say, they played their depth, they played their youngsters, they played their bench until about the 65th minute, and then they put on all their starters. And the Riverhounds came out, got their 1-0 lead, and it was too little too late for Bruce Arena and his boys. And that is a thing that the Rapids did not struggle with, right? They did what they needed to do against a team on the road in Sacramento. They got what they needed to do to get the lead, take the crowd a little bit out of the game, make the opponent chase the game, and allow the Rapids to dictate terms. And so that was a good thing overall. But we don't want it to be that close. You know, we don't want it to be that close.
Yeah, to that point, Rabbi, in these two Open Cup games where really it's been a lot of fringe guys, you know, guys who are comfortably on the bench or not in the regular lineup for MLS games who've really gotten opportunities. And I'm not sure that anybody's like fully stood out. You know, Lewis has stood out from this one, but we would describe Lewis as a first team player who just hasn't been consistently good at MLS play. And so, okay, that's built his confidence. So, you know, beating up on some bad teams grows his confidence. He's now transition that into doing it against MLS opponents. That's good for him. Ironically, I think Max has looked really good, Mark, in these two Open Cup games as well. But like I was waiting to see a Ralph Prizzo, who I still think is kind of on the fringes, maybe needing to prove himself to Robin Fraser, or you know, where he gets a start and thinking like, okay, like I show myself and it doesn't go well on the weekend when I'm not starting, I'm going to be a halftime sub. Or it's the I'm working my way into earning, proving that I should be a starter in MLS play by how I play in these cup competitions. And I'm not sure that anybody's really grabbed that by the horns. You know, Edwards kind of at fault defensively in all three of the goals that the Rapids have given up on in Open Cup play, even though he does score as well. Mark Hanich, I think, is still, you know, super reliable, Mark, but just tactically, I think Robin wants something more out of that left back, left wing back position that Mark Hanich just isn't as suited for that Sam Nicholson does. If you bring Sam Nicholson's attack with Anthony Mark Hanich's defense, Mark, what do you get? Basically Sam Bynes. So, you know, I've been waiting to see one of those guys really go off. You know, like where's the 2012-2013 Dylan Serna, you know, early 20s homegrown performance where he takes over this game. He is the star in the game. And you think like, oh, this is a guy that we wanted to believe in. We hadn't seen him do it in MLS. This is a way for him to prove himself and work his way into the starting 11 or challenge somebody a little bit more. I don't know that Ralph Prizzo with these performances is challenging a fully fit and healthy Brian Acosta. I don't know that Anthony Mark Hanich is proving that he should start in most circumstances over Sam Nicholson, and that's maybe a minor disappointment that I have about that. Last thing that I'll have on Big Thing, Mark, you know, I did say, you know, the most important thing was the Rapids get a result. This was a difficult game. This was a banana peel, and ultimately they survived and advanced, even if the scoreline was a little bit flattering. I'm looking at probably a really difficult draw for the round of 16, Rabbi. LAFC won in penalties over Monterey Bay last night, and then we're currently looking at Houston beat Sporting Kansas City, Nashville beat Dallas, and Austin beat New Mexico. I'm saying that because I think that removes the possibility for the Rapids being put in a draw that has them playing teams that are east of Denver. I think it's most likely there's going to be four teams left, Denver and West, and the Rapids are going to be lumped into that. So LAFC is one of them. LA Galaxy are currently up 1-0 in the opening minutes against Seattle Sounders. Who had the goal in that, I'm wondering? Julian Aude, their new Brazilian fullback. So it's going to be, so either way, Mark, that's a Pacific time zone team. So that makes three, including the Rapids. And then Portland is playing RSL right now. All these games, listeners, will be final by the time you are listening to this podcast. The draw may have already happened as well. So, Mark, that's four teams, Mountain Time Zone and left. Phoenix is out. New Mexico is out. And any of the Texas teams are going to be lumped in with the other teams in the Midwest or even teams that are going east as well. So you're looking at LAFC. That's probably bad. I wouldn't like the chances of going to Portland midweek, though I would like the chances for the Rapids playing Portland at home. Rocky Mountain Cup, either way, Mark, is going to be a tough deal, regardless of who's the home team in that. You're ironically almost, Rabbi, I'm almost rooting for the LA Galaxy to knock out Seattle in this one and then have to play the LA Galaxy potentially with their, you know, them having to prioritize league play just because they're so far out of the playoff picture. I would bet, Mark, given where the two teams are in the MLS Next Pro standings, that a Rapids 2 rotational Rapids squad team beats the crap out of Los Dos in that one. So the draw could be extremely favorable for the Rapids, or they could have to go play at LA AFC and get absolutely destroyed, and then this cup run turns into, oh hey, that was kind of fun for two games, which is disappointing, Mark, given I feel like these two games and the way that they've approached it, that both the coaching staff and the players have approached it is understanding the importance of it and understanding the context of the fact that the Rapids have a horrible history and a horrible narrative around this competition, and they're trying to change that for the better. And all of that could be for naught if we get LAFC, and if we get the LA Galaxy, then you're looking at one home favorable draw from plausibly making a semifinal, and that is a cup run, no doubt about it.
Nice. I definitely feel nervous about who we get in the next round. It's the draws are troubling, and I think the other thing that's really interesting is the round of 16 is a real rubber match question with regard to the tactics of U.S. Open, and the Rapids have not really dealt with. They haven't won two games in U.S. Open in forever. What is it? 2001. 2006, something like that. It was a long time ago. And for Robin Fraser, it's probably never happened for him. So the question that he has to answer is, to your point, you were kind of talking about the bench and the depth and so on. Do the Rapids go with a lineup that is predominantly made up of, you know, young players and bench players and reserve players so they can continue to get experience and continue to allow to rotate the squad so that the frontline regular starting 11 play in the MLS Cup, or do we start putting our starters in the round of 16 because we know we're going to be facing some real big guns coming up and it's going to be a real challenge? And to, I think you mentioned, you know, you have to deal with Leafs Cup, which is coming up, and you need to start to allocate your resources carefully. And that's all at a time when we're not really sure about our frontline depth because of a recent crisis, which we're going to get to right after we talk about why you should become a subscriber to Holding the High Line, because Holding the High Line is an absolutely wonderful resource that all of you, if you can help us, support us, we would really appreciate it. So, the Colorado Rapids are our passion. We love it. We talk about it for fun. We do this for free every day of the week, twice on Sunday. But, you know, the one thing that we really appreciate is knowing that our fans, both of the writing for Holding the High Line, for Matt's amazing work at Burgundy Wave. Matt wrote the definitive, fantastic first break article from the Rapids perspective, all about the crisis that we have yet to talk about, but we will in a second, about Max Alves. And then, of course, I wrote some great stuff this week tactically about the Colorado Rapids and on our Holding the High Line Substack. All of that is not free. Podcasting, hosting, written work, traveling to games, gas, for me, sometimes airfare, you know, a pint after the match with y'all at the Bulldog, like, it ain't free. We love to do it. We do it out of passion, but we would love your support to express your appreciation for what we do. If you can help us by subscribing to our Substack, you can be a paid supporter, aka a Highliner, by putting in just $5 a month or $42 a year. A yearly subscription will get you some discounted or free merch. I think we're pretty much settling in on it being a pint glass. We're very excited to be offering this. I've got to do a little work on tweaking the graphics so that it looks really cool. I have a graphic designer that I've got working with in-house. And then if you are a yearly person, you'll either get a deep discount on that or we'll mail it to you for free. So get in on that now. You're going to want it when we have it, and we're definitely going to price it at a special break or for free for our Highliners. You will be supporting citizen soccer journalism, and we appreciate it. Back to you, Matt, for the not-so-pleasant news that we have to take a deep dive into.
I'm going to break up this awkward transition, Rabbi, by just for the listeners who are looking at this. On the off chance it ends up being a Rocky Mountain Cup matchup in the Open Cup, Rabbi, the Rapids have played RSL twice. Nice. In the Open Cup, once in 2006, once in 2007. They haven't played since. The 2007 game was back at Rice-Eccles Stadium, so pre-America First Field, Rio T, and the Rapids won that game 1-0, and then they won back at DSG in the first year of DSG in 2007. 2007 by a score of 2-1. So, Mark, maybe the secret to winning the Open Cup the whole time is the Rapids are only good against RSL when we play them in the Open Cup. So, a thought there, some optimism for you Rapids fans should it end up being a Rocky Mountain Cup, Open Cup, fifth round, instead of just absolute dread about going out to RSL in the round of 16. Listeners, earlier today, as first reported, I'm going to butcher these names, listeners, first reported by Gustavo Gumarreis of Territorio MLS, and then later added to by O Globo, which is a crudely, I guess you could say, like the New York Times of Brazil, are reporting that there's an investigation going on by the Brazilian Public Ministry about Brazilian players participating in a sports gambling scheme that includes mostly Brazilian players based in Brazil in the two divisions there in Brazil, but then also including players from abroad that includes, as of right now, two named MLS players, one of whom is Colorado Rapids midfielder Max Alves. The other is Zeca, who plays for Houston Dynamo. In the probe, Mark, this is centering around the possibility that Max either accepted or agreed to receiving 60,000 Brazilian real. That's their currency down in Brazil. Currently, with inflation, is being equivalent to just over $12,000 U.S. dollars. And all of this was for him, for the scheme and the people who were organizing it, betting on Max receiving a yellow card in a game back on September 17th, 2022, which was a game against the LA Galaxy. The Rapids lost that game 4-1 and were already eliminated from the playoffs before that match day. Max stepped into the game in the 64th minute, received a yellow card in the 65th minute. Effectively, it was seconds. It was like less than 100 seconds, folks, not just a minute. And he receives a yellow card in there. The game was already 4-0 at that point. There's some conflicting information between O Globo and between Territorio MLS as to whether or not Max was paid in full or paid in full at the time that some of the messages were leaked by the Brazilian government officials at the Brazilian Public Ministry. So some saying that he's only been paid in part, some saying that he had or was planned to have been paid in full, to the extent that that matters. And then also there are discrepancies about how much was the down payment versus how much was the final payment, some being more than half, some being much less, potentially him only receiving $3,000 so far of the $12,000 agreed upon. The leader of the operation has been named Bruno Lopez. Don't know the guy. I've never heard of him. And there were suggestions in some of the leaked communication involving Bruno Lopez and some of his other operators that Max and other players were open to continuing this scheme on the condition that there was prepayment. So potentially not just the game against the LA Galaxy, but the Rapids had two other games left to go in that season. FC Dallas at home for the season finale, for the home finale of the year, and then at Austin FC for decision day. And potentially, this hasn't been implicated, but Mark, I would then ask the question of, if he was open to that, would Max and some of the other players have been open to continuing the scheme into the 2023 MLS season? Max has not been officially charged at time of recording as part of the investigation. A source in Brazil told me earlier today over the phone that the investigation is ongoing, and the authorities potentially are still in the process of gathering evidence or potentially in the process of still organizing and preparing their case to then present to the proper authorities. There's no timeline for the completion of this investigation, but it should be stated that all of the Brazilian players who were previously named and implicated in this report and in the public documents that have been published on the government's end are not currently with their team. A few hours ago, after Burgundy Wave and the Denver Post reached out to the club and the league for a club comment, the Colorado Rapids released this statement, quote, "We are aware of the reports regarding a Colorado Rapids player in a connection with unlawful sports gambling. We take matters of this nature seriously and seek at all times to protect the integrity of the game. The player has been removed from all team activities while MLS conducts an investigation into this matter." So following suit with the Brazilian players who are not with their clubs, Max presumably will not be walking into Dick's Sporting Goods Park anytime soon. And this statement, Mark, also then implies that MLS has now launched their own investigation. Whether or not that's in conjunction with what's going down in Brazil alongside or separate, who knows? Mark, this is very serious. Even though it is only ultimately $12,000, I think it's worth... I saw a lot of chatter, Rabbi, of fans saying, oh, it's 12 grand, and, you know, Max is, you know, due to... I think his Rapids contract is going to be around $1 million by the end of its duration. In 2022, his guaranteed compensation was $293,360. Mark, I feel pretty confident in saying of all the players currently on the Rapids in terms of what they grew up in their elementary school and their adolescent age, Max probably had one of the roughest upbringings. If you're talking about just growing up in abject poverty, not to dissuade, you know, $12,000 is no small amount of cash to you or me, Mark, but, you know, Sebastian Anderson growing up in suburban Denver and, you know, having the setup that you had in, you know, a relatively well-off, you know, academy setup in the American youth system is far from the favelas that Max could have been born into, to say nothing of the cultural difference you have in Brazil, where a lot of those private academies or academies associated with clubs are basically the soccer academy equivalent of a child labor sweatshop. And, you know, who knows, Max is probably looking at this as, you know, he could tear his ACL and be out for the season. And what would that mean for his potential future earnings? He could get hit by a car in an accident because he's driving in America for the first time, and his career could be over. And so that difference. Yeah, but I'm saying, Mark, the before we jump to judge the player, if Max did any of what is alleged, Mark, it is absolutely wrong, and it has no place in this game, and he should be punished accordingly by the Brazilian authorities, by MLS, by the club, potentially FIFA even steps in as well. Should be pointed out, listeners, the charges that have been implied for the Brazilian-based players, I'm not sure if that would be different with maybe some international law, given that Max was playing abroad from Brazil, could include a 2 to 6 year prison sentence and then also a lifetime ban from football in Brazil. Mark, I have to imagine, even if Max is not ultimately extricated back to Brazil and he doesn't see jail time, if Brazil's like, you did something bad enough to where you're banned from Brazil football for all time, I have to think MLS or FIFA would be like, yeah, it's not okay for us to then say, yeah, he can still play in MLS or play elsewhere as well. So listeners, in the Max investigation call Colorado Rapids multiverse, there is a very non-zero possibility that he has played his final game in MLS, his final game for the Rapids, possibly the final game of his career. But going back to my earlier point, Rabbi, before people jump to the, oh, you know, Max makes almost $300,000 a year, you're making all of that risk just for 12 grand and everything, before you, I think, judge the implications of that, understand the individual and where they're coming from to see, not validating what he's doing, Mark, but, Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread to help him eat and then help a starving mother and her child try and eat. And while that was wrong and illegal in pre-French Revolution France at the time, you can see where that would be understanding. And maybe Javert should not have such a black and white view on this, in the same way that I think the greater Rapids and MLS community has looked at the numbers and just said, this is a huge risk on your career. Why did you do this? To say nothing of Mark, again, not making excuses for Max, not saying that what he did was right. If this was then 12 grand per yellow card or 12 grand per prop bet in a game that he's involved in, you know, if he gets 6 or 7 yellow cards in a season, that's no chump change. And potentially, if he's working his way into the starting 11, Mark, at this point, you're looking at 12 grand or potentially increasing payments from Bruno Lopez and his associates as well. That times 34, that can add up really significantly over the course of the season, over the course of a career. Rabbi, I've been talking a lot. I've given all the details that we have. MLS is launching an investigation. The fact that the club took this action and made this statement shows that there's validity. This wasn't just some public documents and then some wonky stuff and then some Brazilian soccer tabloid connecting dots that aren't there and everything. Rabbi, this is serious. This is crappy. And it ruined the vibes for Rapids Twitter this week.
Yeah, I have 3 thoughts, although I may have forgotten what the third one was while you were talking. So the first thought is this, we never want to be quick to judge. Responsible journalism, even secondhand punditry-type journalism, needs to be accurate and responsible. But I'm just going to read this little piece from the AP Wire report that has a few different angles than some of the other things that you talked about, Matt, in the effort of trying to demonstrate that this is very serious and these are these allegations are extremely well-founded. So it was, I think you said this, but I want to clarify again how smoking gunish this is. Brazil's justice minister is launching the probe at the request of the Federation, the Brazilian Federation, because they had a significant amount of evidence. And then it was O Globo and another report, a newspaper in Brazil, that had access to the information that the Brazilian prosecutors had. And that's kind of crazy. And here's where all that leads that I just wanted to quote from the article. This is from the AP article written by Mauricio Savarese, who you quoted earlier, I think. One of the players on that list, Santos defender Eduardo Bauerman, was suspended by his club on Tuesday. The AP had access to the case against Bauerman and other players in which he shows knowledge about the scheme and involvement in it. The prosecutor's evidence alleges that the Santos defender not only exchanged text messages offering up match fixing, but also suggested in November he could bring in two of his teammates to help the scheme. So to that end, I want to say, if you go onto Twitter, you can, or click on any of these articles, you can see digital copies of the text messages. And these are not like thrown about, like you said, Matt, by some sort of fly-by-night hucksterist tabloid Page Six, The Sun type garbage journalism. This is stuff that the prosecutors for the Brazilian Justice Department shared with the newspapers, right? We're at a stage where the prosecutors feel comfortable basically saying, like, oh yeah, we've got the receipts, right? I think Max is in so much hot water right now. I don't think it's irresponsible of me as a journalist to say, I would be shocked if all of this evidence doesn't put him in deep, deep trouble for the near future and puts him indefinitely suspended for the rest of the season. You said it semi-pessimistically, but also said a very sweet and nice thing, Matt, which was, we don't want to rush to judgment. We don't want to judge the kid based on, you know, he came from a lot of poverty. There are mitigating circumstances, or you know, we should understand where this guy comes from. Yes, all of that is true. I don't disagree with it. But right now, it looks like this guy made a young player made a really poor decision, which is, I'm going to take $12,000 for something that, oh, it's the end of the season and we're going to win this game anyways. Who cares whether I get a yellow card or not? But here's my second point, which is really the biggest point that I'll make. He says 1 hour and 7 minutes into the podcast, which is this. It breaks my heart as a sports fan. I am totally naive and an absolute sucker for the game, for all the games that I watch. I was a huge baseball fan, and when the steroid crisis broke, it broke my heart about baseball in a way that I never really fully recovered from, and baseball stopped being my favorite sport pretty much on those cases. I was a huge Tour de France fan. I was a huge cycling fan. I was a huge cyclist myself, just because I liked watching the Tour de France as a kid. When it turned out that literally all 20 of the top 20 riders for a 10-year period had been doping, I was like, I think I'm done with the sport. There's no point. Nobody here is telling the truth. And this is a sport of whoever's doing the right drugs and have the right pharmacologist on their squad is going to win it. Gambling in sport is sort of like that, in the sense that we assume when we watch a sporting event that the players are getting paid a lot of money because they're the most talented person on the field. They're going to give it 100%. They give it 100% for the badge. They give it 100% for their teammates, who are also giving it 100%. And most importantly, they give it 100% for the supporters. And the fact that just $12,000, which for a lot of MLS players is less than they'll make in a game, is enough to make you screw with the integrity of the entire game and the sport, and say, like, sure, I'll take a dive, or sure, I'll kick a guy in the knee to draw yellow. And yeah, maybe we'll lose the game off of it. But like, hey, I get, you know, 1/3 of a new Hyundai, right? $12,000. It blows my mind, Matt. It blows my mind that he would be so dumb not realizing that the downside of getting caught on $12,000 is a lifetime ban from soccer. And I don't mean from the Brazilian league, and I don't mean from MLS. I mean, realistically, when you have eight players in a racketeering and fraud scam that is far-reaching and international, like, I think, and this is my third thing, I think FIFA is going to come in at the end, and no matter what the prison sentences or the fines are, because most of these players are likely going to get suspended sentences or probation or whatever it is, but, like, FIFA would be, if it turns out these guys are all guilty, which it looks like to me they are, FIFA would be insane to not ban them for life. FIFA would be insane not to ban them for life. Because if you don't ban them for life for taking cash for a yellow card, then you potentially open up the possibility that other players will be like, well, you know, the risk is worth the reward, and I'll take $500,000 to throw a Champions League game. I'll take $100,000 to throw an MLS game. And my 3A or 3B of this is, and this is going to be a little unpopular, I think, for some people, our fans who like gambling and like putting a little bit of money on the game, because I get it. I mean, it's fun. There's a rush in it. You have a stake in the match. I mean, I play fantasy. I get it. I'm more interested in how the players for FC Cincinnati are doing when they're on my fantasy roster, and I want to watch the game more because I have a vested interest. All the more so when I put $50 on the game, right? I get it. And when I think I have insider knowledge because I'm so smart and I know so much about soccer, and I put $50 on Portland to beat Real Salt Lake and they win, I feel great. And I take that $50 I just made and I could take my wife out for dinner. And it's a blast, right? The problem is with the promulgation and the rapid expansion of gambling on the internet and into every facet of our lives, that we're getting, you know, FanDuel and BetMGM ads nonstop all the time. The downside of it is there's so much money in the gambling of the game that there's so much impetus, so much like temptation to put your finger on the scale and to adjust things. And that means that, I mean, I'm not opposed to gambling in sport. I also am not naive enough to think that we could end it, right? But that's why the quote-unquote death penalty level, you're never going to play soccer again in professional sport, is probably the only realistic outcome. Because if you don't come down with the hardest response, the reality is other players will, at lower levels and less, you know, with less money. I mean, think about, like, you know, doing it in USL. A USL player makes $2,000 a month. $12,000 is a way bigger deal. And you bet your butt you can bet BetMGM or FanDuel on a USL game. If you don't basically say the death penalty for this kind of shenanigans, you know, then you're just expecting that the whole game is going to be rife with corruption and malfeasance. That's my long-winded soliloquy off of this, but you know, if you couldn't figure it out from the tone in my voice and the break in my heart, like, this really bothers me. This really bothers me. It bothers me not as a Rapids fan and commentator, and not as a journalist, and not as a rabbi, really, but as a sports fan, right? It really means. I wonder a little bit when I go to a soccer game whether it's not WWE and whether the two teams haven't, I know it's not literally this bad, but figuratively, the two teams haven't figured out who's going to win this game before they even come out of the tunnel.
Yeah, good points there, Rabbi. And to your point about the difference between how widespread and now accessible sports gambling is and on how many things you can sports gamble on. You know, I think there were like inter squad scrimmages in like Romania that I think BetUS was doing during COVID because it was literally the only soccer that was happening. And so this is one of several big pots of collateral damage that come with the access mark that, you know, you and I can go on and we can get, you know, the, you know, I'm not even going to say one of the names because I don't want to give them, you know, credit. But like, I can get on a, you know, a gambling sports app right now. I put in my credentials and everything. You have to geolocate your location now because it's different for every single state. And in a matter of 10 minutes, Mark, I could put a dollar or way more on that, on this Golden State Warriors versus Los Angeles Lakers game. And I could bet on all these different prop things. So not just the outcome or the spread and everything, but whether or not a player gets a yellow card, whether or not a player comes off a bench, over under on corners and everything. And so there's so many little what has me so impressed by the by this investigation is that, you know, yellow cards are a major thing, but like, how many other little innocuous things, Mark, could a That's player right. easily fake, not be a super big deal in terms of affecting their standing with the club, that you very easily could bet on these apps, or, you know, behind with, you know, this seems like more of a bookie situation. I don't think these were calls into Vegas that these potential gangsters were using down in Brazil or anything, that you could do and you could get away with. And this is the
bet $1,000 that the player has below 75% passing, right? Shank a couple passes and you make that under. Go ahead,
yes,
Matt. Sorry.
And this is one of the evils that came out of the Pandora's box when in 2020, with the legal ramifications and everything, we were like, yeah, this is fine. Like, we're willing to accept this widespread, not just in Vegas and certain counties elsewhere as well. To say nothing of, obviously, Mark, that, you know, gambling addictions are real and they ruin lives and everything. And look, Mark, you and I are both going to watch a bunch of MLS this weekend. I'm going to go to Dick's Sporting Goods Park. There's probably going to be a bet at some point on the broadcast on Apple TV or on one of the nationally televised games this weekend, because it's rivalry week, and which the Rapids are not participating in. There's only like 7 games of the weekend games that are rivalry week, and all that stuff's going to happen. And there's going to be, and in the graphics that you have or in the ad reads that the people on Apple TV are put on, there's going to be one little paragraph about the, you know, for gambling addictions or issues, call whatever number in whatever state when the fun stops and everything. And we're going to say, okay, that's good enough. And MLS's valuations are going to go up, and they're going to do partnerships, which are going to get them sponsorship money. And these gambling companies and the houses are going to continue to make a whole bunch of money, and families are going to be ruined and lives are going to be ruined because of this gambling addiction. And it opens up a potential backdoor for players to be enticed by this stuff, that if we just said you couldn't do it above board and everything, it would remove this potential temptation for players like Max. And to get to what this means for the Rapids, first of all, listeners, Max is not playing this Saturday. I can almost guarantee you that. As Rabbi and I've said, there's a decent possibility he's played his last game for the Rapids, or potentially ever. Mm-hmm. We're staying, Mark, on, you know, making a joke about gambling ads and their fine print as well, innocent until proven guilty. Rabbi and I have potentially connected dots here, but we're not going to, you know, this should get played out, and we should wait for the final result before judging him in the court of public opinion, like so many already have, unfortunately. And then the other thing that I wanted to say, Mark, is I've seen a lot of outlets and people immediately jump to this being match fixing. For Max and for all the other players involved, this has been about them getting yellow cards. I think that warrants sports betting. I think that warrants calling it a scam or a scheme. I don't know that yellow cards, unless done on an absolute mass scale, could be close enough to where you could call this actual match fixing. Max going in and getting a slightly rough tackle and a ticky-tack yellow card against Chicharito with 30 minutes to go in a game that's already 4-0, there's nothing that Max was doing that was going to change the result there.
So my only objection to that is you're not literally wrong, but the you're kind of like spiritually wrong. No, not to get religious on you, but in the sense that the minute you say, all right, so like a couple guys can go out and get a couple yellow cards and it's not going to affect the game, like you're making a subjective argument about, we don't really for sure know that. Like, let's say Max knows he wants to get a yellow because he's going to make 12 G's if he doesn't. So he kicks the dude across the chest. If you've seen the kick, you'll see what I'm talking about. But let's say that the player's head comes down to the ball and his foot comes a little bit up. Like, he meant to go for a yellow, but oops, he got a red. And let's say there was another Brazilian player on the Rapids who also was trying to get his yellow, right? And he got it 10 minutes earlier. Well, now all of a sudden the Rapids have a player out of the game, and, you know, maybe they're not up by 4, maybe they're only up by 2. So, you know, like, that's the thing. The other thing I'll say, Matt, is, and this is like some real, like, dark kind of magic-y kind of thing, like, I don't know that Max cared that the game was 4-0 before he went and got the yellow. Meaning, maybe if the score was 0-0 or 1-1, he knew that he was going to make 12 large if he got a yellow. And so he was like, listen, I got to make my nut. The season's over anyways. I might as well throw this game, right? So I'm just quibbling on the notion of, like, if we're going to say, like, some actions in a game which a player might choose to do, which might affect the game but won't necessarily throw the game, aren't match-fixing, then we're starting to get into a question, like a spiritual question of what actions are truly match-fixing. You know, like, is it okay to lose 2-0, to lose 2-1 instead of 2-0 when the score is already decided? You know, like, is it okay to, like, concede, right, the line on a game, here's a good example, Matt, the line on a game is, you know, +2, right? And you know to move the line, and all you need to do is flub your chance as a defender on a ball, and you'll just let that ball go in, and it'll go to 2-1, and you'll collect 50,000 because you'll change, you know, the over-under of the total goals scored in the game, right? Like, you could do that. Is it match-fixing? Well, you didn't throw the match, but you, in other circumstances, if the gambler really needed you to do it, you might have thrown the match. Anyways, long-winded explanation, but, like, you just can't mess with the purity of the game, because once you let it in a creek, the doors are wide open.
Yeah. Big picture, Mark, obviously there's a non-zero possibility that Max's career is over and he's going back to whatever opportunities he had that were not football related in Brazil, which I can't imagine were as good. You're looking at potentially throwing away a solid career in MLS, opportunities to go to Europe. From a Rapid standpoint, Mark, that's, you know, the reported $1 million transfer fee potentially down the drain.
Yeah, and he's suspended indefinitely from all team activities, right? Like, I mean, I cannot imagine what training is going to be like tomorrow. You know what I mean? The guys are all going to shuffle in and they're going to look at each other like, dude, WTF. Like, I don't. Some of the guys are going to be like, it's a bummer not to have Max here. And other people are going to be like, damn that guy. You know?
Yeah.
Like, damn him. Damn him for what he did for the integrity of the game and damn him for what he did for this team. We lost a talented midfielder and now what are we going to do?
Yeah, and he was ascending, Mark. You know, he was playing totally. Really well. He did really good
back.
Stuff.
He was having a good season.
Yeah, and so you're looking, and he was doing that in place of Cole Bassett, who'd been out with the hamstring injury. You know, like, Mark, Brian Galvan is going to be rushed back to having to get fully fit, because I don't know who else you play in that position.
Yeah.
Unless it's just, okay, Cabral starting up top, Lewis out wide. This makes a increasingly inconsistent and potentially suspect winger core that was rounding into form that Max was a part of, including Lewis and Barrios.
Now suddenly we might need Gerstbach. Now suddenly running Sebastian Anderson out on the right wing didn't look like a, hey, it's a depth move for a young guy to get a chance. Now it's more like a, Sebi, we might need you, dude. We need you to round into form because we don't have a lot of other options out here.
Yeah, there were 8 guys listed as out in the player availability report, Mark. And so if you're talking about that potentially being, well, 9, I guess it'd remain at 8 potentially short term if Calvin Harris's green card gets sorted and he comes back and everything. But, you know, this turns into a long-term injury. And a long-term injury for a player, you paid a reported $1 million in a transfer fee, and you came in knowing that last year was going to be... So in terms of what did the Rapids get out of that $1 million, Mark? We know that Max coming in, new country, completely different climate to Brazil, cold weather and everything, not speaking English. Like, we knew that this coming season was going to be a wash with maybe some good moments and a nice upward trend towards the end. Max mostly got there, but, like, you're talking, what, 8-10 games of him getting a goal at Charlotte, doing some good stuff in the Open Cup and everything. Like, that was, you know, it'd be completely different, Mark, if this was found out in, like, the middle of October and Max scored a goal that won the Open Cup. Now, whether or not that would be, like, retroactively removed in how, you know, when there's a big scandal for a college football program and, you know, on paper, Mark, like, most most of Joe Paterno's wins at Penn State were removed because of the Jerry Sandusky. So, you know, do the Rapids get to keep the Open Cup? Do we count it? Are there, you know, that's a whole other hypothetical as well. But like, what do the Rapids really get out of Max at this point? If ultimately his time at the club's done, a nice 4 or 5 games with Cole Bassett hurt.
Really quick financially, teams know about this kind of thing, and Porrick Smith is having a long night because he's currently probably in the office poring over insurance documents to make sure that they're covered in case a player is terminated for reasons of malfeasance and integrity of the game violations. But like, typically, if you have a player with a season-ending injury, you have some sort of like insurance coverage, so that you're like indemnified from paying that player's salary and so on. There are lots of things like performance enhancing substances. Sometimes like a player will, you know, that'll also trigger a termination clause in a player's contract. So, and then came the lawyers, right? Like, now's the time when attorneys, insurance companies, and agents are all kind of on the phone with the Rapids trying to figure out like what happens. In the best world for Colorado, they get 100% salary relief. The player is terminated. It doesn't affect. They have some open space on their payroll because of this. But there's another world in which, based on the language of the contracts, like, you paid for it. It's your responsibility. It's your problem. His behavior is your problem, right? Which is that money is gone. That player, the insurance is not going to pay that out. And that, you know, KSC and the salary cap are, you know, they're hit by max and there's no relief for it. And, you know, we don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. And potentially Mark, KSC, or, you know, one of the accountants that's in, you know, Stan or Josh's ear looks at this and they're probably thinking like, well, we agreed to cut this check because we were buying a player that was worth $1 million that eventually was going to be really good for the team, increase revenues, or potentially be sold for multiple millions of dollars further down the road as well. So does KSC look at that and say, okay, are they disinterested for whatever reasons in further investing in the club because another investment didn't work out, regardless of maybe the club's inability to anticipate this circumstance coming up and then planning for it both on the field, off the field, and in the checkbook and in the war chest and everything. Listeners, this coming Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
We haven't even covered it. We're the world's fastest preview in the world. We're just going to be like, yeah, it's going to be a good game. All right, here we go.
Okay, the Colorado Rapids are playing the Philadelphia Union this coming Saturday, folks. Colorado Rapids currently sitting 10th in the Western Conference, one place below the playoff line. 12 points on 11 games played. They have a record of 2-3-6, goal difference of -3, and at home this season, they've yet to win a game. 0-1-3 is their record. Philadelphia Union currently sitting 7th in the Eastern Conference, 14 points off of 10 games played. Their record is Mike Bassett's favorite formation, 4-4-2. And they have a goal difference of +2. And away from Chester, Pennsylvania, in league play this season, they are 1-3-1. Mark, this is a Philadelphia Union team that has gotten off to a rocky start relative to their standards in league play due to the other competitions that they have participated in. They are already out of the Open Cup. They lost on penalties to Minnesota on yesterday at time of recording, and they are out of Champions League as well. They got trounced by LAFC in the second leg. LAFC is officially their bogey team, Mark. I look at this squad, Rabbi, and, you know, I see a lot of the similar faces that we thought were very, very good on a team that was great. They have Alejandro Bedoya, who is their captain, who's back healthy. He missed MLS Cup last year. Kai Wagner, one of the best fullbacks in MLS. Andre Blake is back from his injury. It was Joe Bendick earlier on in the season with him being out, Mark. Daniel Gosdog is a great number 10-ish kind of player. Julian Carranza, Ure, who knows Andreas Maxiu from their time playing together in Denmark. This is a good team on paper, Rabbi. This is a team that put most of their early season chips into CCL that is not cashed out. The only competition they're going to have to worry about for the next several months prior to League's Cup is going to be league play. They've sacrificed some results in league play and gotten some unfortunate results because of CCL. They did win this past weekend in league play, winning a penalty to beat New York Red Bulls 1-0 in Gerhard Struber's final game for New York Red Bulls. So, Mark, there's kind of a question of, is this a team that kind of has a CCL hangover and isn't going to be yet clicking into their groove on the weekend? Or is this a team that's going to come and being like, we're out of the Open Cup, we could have won that, we're out of Champions League, we could have won that final and everything. F everybody in all of our circumstances, we are going to wreck MLS, and the Colorado Rapids are just the first casualty that is in our way. Rabbi, your thoughts?
There's a few replacement players to this team that are probably... maybe kind of keeping things, well, they haven't settled in yet. And then there's one player who I think we can all wonder whether it maybe kind of passed his expiration date. Alejandro Bedoya is still starting for this team at the age of 36. And he's a shuttler in a 4-4-2 diamond midfield, along with a much younger player, Jack McGlynn. McGlynn is a wonderful player who's still kind of rounding into form, and you know, was a kind of a bench option that was spot starting last year, and now it seems like he's starting every match. And then behind the two of them is Leon Flack at defensive mid. He's a new player for them. He came from St. Pauli, who is a really fun team because they have all the cool hip fans and all that stuff. And then in addition to that player, along the back line is 30-year-old Damian Lowe, who started for Inter Miami last year. So they're integrating some new players. They're experiencing maybe some struggles of some old players. And then all the guys you mentioned, Julian Carranza, Ghost Dog, Daniel Gazdag, who is a fantastic number 10, like one of the most electric players, you know, in the league. If it weren't for Thiago Almada, I think he'd be getting all the shine right now. Jacob Glessinus and Kai Wagner and Andre Blake. I mean, this is a team with five legit all-star level players in MLS. The problem is the other five players, I think, right now. And maybe those five guys are just kind of like the team is trying to, kind of like how the Rapids were trying to figure out who is our best starting 11 at the beginning of the season. That might be a factor for Philly. The other thing I'll say really quickly, since we do not want to make this podcast any longer than it already is, you know, this is a Philly team that is probably just really thrilled to not be playing LAFC again, because they played them two matches in a row. Three in a very short period of time, because they wound up with an MLS regular season game against LAFC in between two matches that they played. I think a game their first level their two games of the
Champions League.
Yeah, Champions League. So, sorry, words not coming. Wavy arm sleeve thingies. I just feel like they're underperforming. They're 12th overall in MLS right now on the total table. I think that's way low for them. I think ultimately this team is going to finish top four, top six, no problem. I hope they don't do it against Colorado, but of course, winning on the road in Commerce City is always tough. This is not the game they wanted, and they just got knocked out, you know, by a mediocre Minnesota team in Open Cup. So nothing's really clicking for them. They probably want to go on the road and get healthy in a game that matters. And, you know, maybe this is a good one for them to bounce back on. I feel like Philly's got this one. I'm going to pick them for a 2-0 win. Matt, what do you think?
Philly did rotate much more significantly than I think the Rapids did in terms of players, in terms of total minutes that were logged by their regular first team players. You know, Ray started. So if I just look at 1, 2, I count maybe 4 the most regular starters for Philly that started in that game against Minnesota that went to 120 minutes. And one of those is Andre Blake, Mark. I have to imagine that he's going to feel better, you know, on two, three days rest than some of the other field players as well. And I look at the, I don't know. Rabbi, ask me when we get the injury report. Is Cole Bassett back, and is he ready to step in for Max's position? Can him and Brian Galvan kind of utility that position as well? I don't know where these teams are psychologically right now, because, you know, to your point, Rabbi, earlier about training and the vibes and what the conversations in the locker room at Dick's, what's that going to be like and everything. You know, you're coming off a Open Cup win and everything, getting back to being at home and everything. You're like, okay, we get a few more guys healthy, we can take on Philly. Philadelphia. We get up for that game. We win. We get above the playoff line. And then, you know, we've beaten a team that we would consider being a very good team, a team that we aspire to be like in terms of what Jim Curtin's done the last 2 or 3 years. And then this scandal potentially blows that up. You don't have Darren Yapi. Right. Potentially you're shorthanded. Maybe the injuries don't come back. For Philly, like, who knows? Do they come in pissed off? Do they come in burn out and everything? I don't know where the psyches of these two clubs are, given all the things that have happened for them in the last 10 days between Philly winning in league play to bounce back from getting knocked out of Champions League and then proceeding to getting knocked out of another cup competition that normally they take seriously, and the difference between the highs and the upward trajectory the Rapids were having to losing Max, and then where are their heads as well at. So I'll be honest, this is the game I feel the least confident in terms of predicting, Mark. I could see a 3-0 win either way, just depending on how stuff goes and everything. So I guess I'll balance it out and say a 1-1 draw, because the Rapids aren't going to give us joy in actually winning a game at the Richard anytime soon.
Last thing I was going to say, I just have to correct myself. They haven't played 3 times this season against LAFC. They've just played twice. They just played back-to-back games against them because they had a bye, basically, in MLS in between their two CONCACAF games. Somehow I had misremembered that I felt like they had played at the beginning of the season in kind of like a recap of their, their LAFC Philly game was, you know, of course, the MLS Cup final, but nope, they've only played in their only rematch was in CONCACAF Champions League. But the other thing I was going to say is this game, we've reached the point of the season for both the Rapids and Philly, Matt, you said it really well, where it's about psyche, right? It's about how everybody's feeling. We're kind of in a losing streak. We're in a funk. We've lost a player to a gambling scheme, you know, like there's locker rooms in tumult, you know, like chaos at the dance floor. You know, it's less about tactics and talent, and it's more about vibes. And that's a thing that's important to note. Matt, should we get out of here? You want to tell them how to hit us on the socials and all that good stuff?
Listeners, follow us collectively on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96podcast. Check out all of our writing, soccer-related, Rapids-related, otherwise, at Pittsburgh Soccer Now, Last Word on Sports.com, /soccer, BurgundyWave.com, and the aforementioned Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Go there, view us in web format, subscribe to our email newsletter, support us financially. That is the best way to support this podcast, $5 a month or $42 for the year to become a Highliner. Send us your questions via email at rapids96podcast@gmail.com or on the Twitter machine using the hashtag AskHTHL. Listeners, we'll see you next week, and who knows where we're going to be at. This was a vibes mess, and we'll see you next time.
Spiritually, we're adrift. Peace.